5th, 2020. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflow.
And I'm Pam Bedore.
We're back again for our daily podcast, reading through the memoirs of Sherlock Holmes. Today's story, The Adventure of the Gloria Scott. Pam, is it your turn to read the summary?
Sure, yeah. In his university days, Holmes spent a month with his friend Victor Trevor at Victor's father's estate in Norfolk. While there, Holmes amazed his host, Victor's father, who was a justice of the peace and a landowner. He had made his fortune in the gold fields of Australia. One of Holmes's deductions was that the elder Mr. Trevor was once connected with someone with the initials J.A., whom he wanted to forget. His host then passed out on the table. Holmes had touched a sore spot and possibly did not believe the old man's explanation once he had come back to himself that J.A. had been an old lover.
This is such an interesting story. This is Sherlock's first case. This is a prequel.
It is a prequel. He's at university, Steve.
One of your favorite things to talk about, the idea of those college years.
And of course, we learned that, you know, Sherlock Holmes, of course, by himself, quite a bit, staying in his dorm room and contemplating, Steve. Contemplating.
That's what college is about, Chip, right? Wasn't that your college experience?
Sure, you can explore the world. You can explore the world of ideas and friends, but why do that when you can sit in a dorm room and, you know, think about logic?
And watch Animaniacs.
Now, I personally love flashback stories for any character that I like when, you know, here we've read like 15 other stories with Sherlock, and now you picture what he was like when he was younger. And it's funny because Sherlock and Watson are actually pretty young in the first novel. They're in their early 20s in A Study in Scarlet, but this is even before Watson. And so one of the things I really liked as he was thinking about his early days is that the only sports that Sherlock likes are boxing and fencing, which are both, of course, individual sports. And here's where we meet our pre-Watson sidekick. So Sherlock actually had a very good friend before, who was Victor Trevor. And I really liked the details about Victor. Quote, he was a hearty, full-blooded fellow, full of spirits and energy, the very opposite to me in most respects. But we had some subjects in common, and it was a bond of union when I found out that he was as friendless as I. So the thing they have in common is that they're both loners. And this is what draws them together.
Well, Chip, we've talked about this so many times. Going to college, you find your tribe, you find your people. You might not have found the people that you want to spend so much time with in high school. You might not like those people, but when you get to college, you have such a wider variety of people from so many different parts of the world. You might find your people, and it sounds like they made a connection here.
I think you're exactly right, Steve, is that one of the college experiences is finding, maybe there was a person in high school, maybe a few people who shared your love of something. But when you get to college, though, you know, now you're in many of these, you know, especially these big state schools, there's, you know, it's 20 or 30,000 people. There may be a whole group that shares your affinity for fencing or your love of boxing or, you know, Doctor Who, like you enjoyed, or any number of subjects that, you know, you wouldn't necessarily find a large body of people at your, you know, your schooling who enjoyed. So, you know, good for them.
Trevor Sr. is especially blown away by Sherlock pulling out the letters J.A. And he says to Holmes, quote, I don't know how you manage this, Mr. Holmes, but it seems to me that all the detectives of fact and of fancy would be children in your hands. That's your line of life, sir. And you may take the word of a man who has seen something of the world. This is really a father taking this friend of his son's under his wing and going, here you go, there you go, I found your special skill, you should do this for a living.
I'm going to interrupt on that because I think it was more than just a father. It was a person who wasn't his father, who basically noticed a skill and inspired him to consider using, you know, what your unique gift to the world is, to go out there and do it. It was somebody who was not Holmes's father.
And this is something that all three of us do, not necessarily as a living, but Chip, you have been inspiring young people to find their path for a while now.
Well, yeah, I mean, I go down to a leadership institute and we work with young men who, you know, who are their freshman and sophomore. The world's very black and white for them at that point. And as their education changes and they become, you know, thinking on a more mature level, many times being around people who have done extraordinary things will hopefully inspire that next generation to do extraordinary things.
And Pam, in your university, you are certainly helping young people to find their special skills.
Sure, yeah. Like students come to professors all the time to ask about careers, but also to think about, like, what does it all mean? You know, I'm an English professor, so I get to have a lot of those kinds of philosophical conversations with people. And to help people, sometimes, you know, in English, we get a lot of students who maybe thought they would go into science fields and then realize, oh, their very favorite classes are actually in the humanities. And so they do a lot of soul searching about what direction that they want to go in. And so I do think this is a really sort of special moment that Holmes is reflecting back on. Someone that he didn't even have a lot of interaction with. I think he just met Trevor's father a couple of times. He stayed at their house for a week or whatever. But he, that conversation, that note from this older, respected justice of the peace saying, hey, you could do this professionally. You could be a professional detective, was actually this huge moment in his life that any educator has with students. And I remember exactly the professor who inspired me to go to grad school. As I'm sure, you know, we all have those mentors in our past, and it's important sometimes to reflect upon.
That's something that we talk about on Too Much Scrolling all the time, that mentoring, that is important to your community. If you're not helping young people, mentoring them into the next phase of their lives, you're missing out. You should really be a part of that. I digress. Let's get back to Sherlock Holmes. I think of some of the other prequels that expose the character of our beloved protagonists. I think of the book Fletch 1 by Gregory MacDonald. This is the prequel of the story Fletch that you might remember that Chevy Chase did the Fletch movie. That's a series of detective investigative novels. This one shows how another young investigator got his start in the world of investigation. My favorite origin story, however, is Terry Pratchett's 29th Discworld novel, Night Watch. That was published in 2002. In this one, Samuel Vimes, the commander of the Ankh-Morpork City Watch, is sent back in time to when his police career began, and he was taught everything he knows by the wise John Keel. But when he arrives in the past, Vimes finds that the arch criminal he was pursuing has traveled back in time as well and has murdered Keel. Vimes assumes Keel's identity and proceeds to teach himself everything he knows about being a good man and a good cop. The glorious 25th of May is celebrated around the world ever since. These days we call it Geek Pride Day, and it's only 50 days away. All the details can be found on our website, geekprideday.net. There, I got that in.
That's awesome. You know, it's so funny. Terry Pratchett is one of these writers I've meant to read, and I haven't yet. So you're inspiring me. I love that story. That's great.
This is a great place to start. You might not know who these characters are in order to get to the prequel, but this is such a touching story about mentorship, about teaching, about learning, about youth, and about, you know, understanding. It's a great place to start. I really highly suggest Night Watch.
I am not going to start on the 29th novel of... My friend, I am a very committed serial reader. I will start at novel one. But anyway, back to Holmes. Now, you guys notice that this short story, it actually starts with a cipher, a secret code, with hen pheasants, no less. When you saw this cipher, let me ask you, as readers, did you guys try to figure it out? Or did you just sit back and watch?
I did not try to figure it out.
Really?
No. Because, but I, as it was actually it was being read to me. And that's the reason why I was making coffee at the time, Steve.
Oh, if you're doing an audiobook, you're far less likely to pause and see if you can figure out the code. That's a good point. What about you, Steve?
I absolutely saw these words and went, what does that mean? It obviously means something. It was obviously a secret code. And the way that Sherlock presented it to Watson with a smile on his face, like, yeah, okay, here's your puzzle for the day, Mr. Watson. See if you can figure it out as smartly as I am. And I absolutely was trying to figure it out. And I didn't like stop and take out a piece of paper and start right. doing what he does with the every other word, the first uh-huh. letters of every word. I knew that there was something to it. I didn't do that, but it did cross my mind that it was one of those normal ciphers.
Well, and yeah, and that's the thing. So this story, the Gloria Scott, brings up that notion of fair play that Arthur Conan Doyle laid out for us everything in that little message. And you're exactly right how Sherlock presents it to Watson. He lays out like you, the reader, could play along if you want. Right? But this is one of the questions in detective scholarship is how many readers really enjoy detective fiction for that, for the puzzle of it? You'll remember I mentioned before that Edmund Wilson said detective fiction is somewhere between crossword puzzles and smoking as a vice. And so this idea of figuring out the puzzle, or how much do we just love to watch someone else do the puzzle while we just read along? So I think that this story really highlights that different readers get really different things out of the exact same stories.
And I certainly am going to digress here, but think about the ratings that poker play gets on
yes.
television. Because you are watching a drama and individuals, you have some extra information that the other players do not have, because you get to see the hands and how they work the other players. I mean, there's a lot to this. So I think you've hit something really important there. Do you like detective fiction because you like the journey? Or do you like detective fiction because you like to figure out the puzzle? That's incredibly insightful.
And I'm sure that it's a combination of both, and it's a balance between both. Again, my wife is huge into reading all of these detective novels. Any kind of cop story where there's investigation, that is her genre, and she loves the puzzle for sure.
One of the things that I was trying to figure out was whether the name James Armitage meant something, and I don't think it did, but I actually went to the web browser and was just searching, like, this name must mean something, and I don't think it was. I think it was just a name he pulled out. So as you're trying to figure out puzzles, I'm thinking about names.
Yeah, well, and you're thinking about historical connections, right? And that's a way, this is one of the reasons I have so enjoyed doing this podcast with you guys, is that the three of us all read very, very differently. And Chip, you're always looking for historical connections, which I really appreciate because I'm not a history buff. And I love that you can sometimes pull things out or sometimes you can't, right? Sure. And so, yeah, it's fun that we all three read very, very differently. Now, I like that you went down the rabbit hole with the J.A. And I didn't go down that rabbit hole, but I did think about those initials. Why do you think he has when he changes his identity, he has his old initials tattooed onto his body? What do you think that's about?
Yeah, and I was thinking about that. And it could be in your youth, you make decisions. And you have to live with those decisions for your whole life. So it could be that, you know, I'm a young person and I'm a rebel and I put J.A. on my arm. And what I kind of got from that also is that Holmes noticed that he was trying to get rid of this tattoo. And I used to have a teacher in my life, and he was ex-military, and he had a tattoo on his arm. And I remember him taking sandpaper and rubbing the sandpaper over his arm, and it would bleed and it would heal. And when it would heal, he would do it again. So I don't know if he did it every few weeks or every month or something. But obviously, this gentleman was trying to erase his past.
That's really interesting. I also wonder, like, when he placed that tattoo, was he sort of branding himself? Because he had been a criminal, right? And a white collar criminal. He embezzled money. But then on this mutiny ship, he became part of a mutiny, which was a very serious crime in the 19th century. And then when he takes the new identity, is he sort of self-punishing? Because he's not going to be punished. He's going to get away with his crimes, both the white collar crime and the more violent crime on the Gloria Scott. Is there this sort of self-punishment that's maybe a part of that?
Could be. You could be. You're kind of branding yourself. And that, and there's the real interesting part about this is where I actually kind of wrote out my little notes. He was a bad boy and he got punished. Once he got punished, he was being shipped to Australia and he escaped that punishment through this mutiny. And then he basically matured and he made his money. They chose to go back to England. And at that point, he was known as an honorable person who made good choices, very reasonable person. You know, he became the honorable person he wanted to be. And where the story, you know, kind of takes up and where we get our mystery is a person arrives at his home to remind him of this person he was in his youth.
Yeah, and this is not the first time we see those sort of hauntings from the past, right? We've had several stories now when someone from the past appears after someone has turned a new leaf. And so, I don't know, what do you guys think Doyle is saying about a person's ability to start a new life and to forget about youthful indiscretions or even crime?
Well, certainly the people are succeeding. And I don't know if they're succeeding because they did something in the past that they regret and they're trying to make up for it or any number of things. Or those risk-taking things that you do as a youth allow you to be the successful person in the future. I mean, there's a whole bunch you could kind of pull from that. But certainly, these people are still being haunted by the person that they do not want to be. So it just seems to, at some point, catch up to them, and they're very ashamed of it, as you can see, and even in this story, he was very ashamed of who he was.
Right.
Which brings us to sort of a current event. I don't know if you saw earlier this month, in March of 2020, there was a gentleman who was in Oak Park, Tennessee. He was 94 years old, but anyway, he was outed as a concentration guard in the Nazi military during World War II. So he's 94 years old, and he's going to be sent back to Germany to go on trial.
Wow!
I think it was last year they found a gentleman in New York City who was 95, and they sent him back to Germany to be trialed. For his military crimes or crimes against humanity. It's really what it would come down to. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these people lived, I'm assuming, a quiet life. They certainly worked their way in through society, but their past caught up to them. And in fact, there are groups out there who still are hiring people to seek these people out. And it's amazing that a 94-year-old man is going to be sent back to Germany to address something he committed, a heinous crime, a long, long time ago.
Wow, that's super interesting. And it comes to this idea of, like, can you ever escape? To what degree does your youth shape who you are in your 60s, 70s, 80s, even 90s? That's pretty incredible.
Sure.
And the opposite idea is, yes, these people should be held accountable for their crimes. But the question of, has he become a different person in the last 50 years? Is he the same youthful person that he was 50 years ago? That becomes a big question mark in the assessment of the crime and the criminal.
Well, obviously, he is a different person. He's a judge. His community has, either elected him or placed him in a position where he is helping make decisions with two parties who have disagreements.
the character in the Sherlock Holmes story. Yeah.
And he's Sherlock Holmes's mentor, right? I mean, he had this incredibly important role to play in Sherlock Holmes becoming a detective. So yeah, I think Doyle has a very open-minded thought that people really can change. And you know, this is sort of a small point, but I do want to make it because we're entering a new set of stories here by Doyle. So did you guys notice Mr. Trevor has a pretty hysterical reaction to when he gets the letter and his son describes it? He began running around the room in little circles like a man who has been driven out of his senses. And then he has a stroke and he's partially paralyzed. So I just wanted to note to you that in the 19th century, hysteria, which is what's happening here, is typically associated with women. And even the word hysteria etymologically is connected to the womb. So like a hysterectomy, womb, hysteria. Sure. And so I'm just going to note, we don't have to go down this track right now, but even while he was writing these incredibly rational stories of Sherlock Holmes, placing reason and deduction above all else, Doyle was also super interested in spiritualism and mesmerism. So there's some really interesting work in early gender studies on some of the Doyle stories. This is just a hint of what we're going to see in some of the stories to come. So I'm putting that on your radars.
So do we cue the X-Files theme or cue Twilight Zone? I don't know. I'm not really sure which one we go with here, Steve.
Spiritualism is not something that is so weird, Chip. It's okay to be spiritual. It's okay to think about what things might be occurring outside of the realm that we can understand. It's not all...
Well, and friends, let's think about this. In the late 19th century, a lot of people thought, hey, we're going to be able to explain everything with science. Go us, go science. But I think in 2020, we know that even though we can explain many, many things with science, I think there are some limits, epistemological limits, to what we can fully explain. And I think that, you know, Doyle was really interested in that a little bit ahead of his time in some ways.
We've understood so many things, but there are still so many mysteries. The theory of everything, Stephen Hawking's life's work, trying to put together one theory that is the way that everything works. Now that he's passed away, a lot of people are looking at that going, no, there is no theory of everything. Maybe we will never get to one answer to everything. Maybe there's multiple answers to things. Very interesting.
That's just stinking thinking, Steve. Stinking thinking right there.
And I also want to note for you guys that, so even while Doyle was interested in mesmerism and spiritualism and hysteria, like that's an unusual, unexpected reaction from like a man who was part of a mutiny, right? Who was a judge. He was also really interested in maritime literature and that adventure story, which is also super popular at this time. People really love the romance of the sea and also the idea of conflicts in carrying dangerous cargo, conflicts at sea, and especially like mutiny is a really common theme at this time. So he's kind of pulling on some of the strands that people are especially interested in this story, well, in all of the Sherlock Holmes stories. So anyway, you know me, I want to talk about the ending. What did you
really?
Guys... And I know, right? What did you think of the ending? Did Holmes even really do anything? Or, I mean, his reveal is sort of just supported by the documents that appear at the end.
Boy, the answer to that question is Indiana Jones was very important in the Raiders of the Lost Ark. If he wasn't there, the story would not have happened that way. Now, is Sherlock Holmes discovering anything in this, or is the discovery being handed to him? That's an interesting question. But without that moment where Sherlock Holmes reveals the JA link here, mm-hmm. I think this story would have been different. So yes, yep. Sherlock was vital to this story. What do you think, Chip?
I'm going to go with you.
Yeah. Good choice.
This story, I think, is just as much about revealing Sherlock Holmes, the young Holmes, as it is about revealing Mr. Trevor's past. And at the very end of the story, Holmes narrates some of the events and then says, "Those are the facts of the case, Doctor. And if they are of any use to your collection, I am sure that they are very heartily at your service." And so we often get Holmes saying, "Oh, you don't have to write this," or "You're writing it incorrectly," or whatever. Here he's like, "Watson, here's a story for you. Please feel free to share it. This is a good one."
It highlights who he is, and I think he is very interested in sharing the who he is with the readership. If we're going with the game and Sherlock Holmes is real, this certainly lends itself to that realism where he says to Watson, "Hey, Watson, why don't you tell this story?"
Exactly. Exactly.
This has been great. This has been fun. Thank you so much for all of your insights, Pam. And Chip, thank you so much for bringing your perspective into this. We have learned so much about ourselves reading these Sherlock Holmes stories. And I hope everybody out there is reading along with us. We'll be back tomorrow with our next tale, The Adventure of the Musgrave Ritual. That's interesting.
Oh, this is a good one.
That's really good one.
Oh, okay. Yes.
I look forward to tomorrow's conversation. Make sure that you're sending your feedback to us. We'd love to hear from you. Give us a voicemail. Send us a text. We'd love to hear from you. Answer our main question: what makes Sherlock Holmes the most popular detective ever? And make sure you follow the hashtag TMS Sherlock Holmes for all of the artwork and all of the things that everybody else has been sending to follow along with these tales. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflug.
And I'm Pam Bedore.
We'll see you in the future. Just, no, that's not it. I was giving the wrong intro, wrong show.